Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's very unique, very unusual episode of Monday Night Raw. One of the weirdest episodes of Monday Night Raw I think you're likely to see at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Let's get right to it. We start Monday Night Raw off this week with the champion, Seth Rollins, making an appearance. Now, I could bitch about this a little bit for a couple of reasons. Number one, when other people have been attacked by the freak, it's, oh, they went to the hospital and we'll keep you updated on their condition and they're not going to be okay for a day or two. Seth Rollins has just went through hell with Braun Strowman, then was attacked by the Fiend, and he comes out looking fine, smiling, waving at the fans. Not his fault, probably, because he's told to come out there. He's told you're going to have a match. I don't know what he's supposed to do. He can't come out there in a body cast. But it's just unusual, really, that they didn't tell him, you know, take the night off, or, you know, we'll get you in the ring for the end if we have to, if we want to pull that angle, but you don't really need to do a match. It's weird. It's weird how they keep wanting them to no-sell things. But anyway, he gets in the ring and he recaps everything that happened, basically, at Clash of Champions. Here's the unusual part. And we really shouldn't say it's that unusual anymore, should we? Because it's been happening more and more. Fans aren't really buying into this anymore. You can clearly see that the fans are deserting Seth Rollins. And going up against the Fiend in Hell in a Cell is not going to do him any favors. I think the fans now are starting to feel about Seth Rollins the way they used to feel about Roman Reigns, and that is, well, Jesus, they're just handing him everything. He's getting clean victory after clean victory after clean victory. Nothing ever seems to hurt him. He's fine. We get it. He's Superman. And I think fans are starting to resent it. When Seth Rollins said he was attacked by the Fiend, there were cheers and chants of yowie wowie. So I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do about that situation. We said ahead of time, not going to do Seth Rollins' face persona any good, putting him up against the Fiend at this stage. But anyway, to their credit, the WWE has a Firefly Funhouse, sort of a live Firefly Funhouse on the Titantron, but supposedly live, where Bray Wyatt addresses Seth Rollins. This is the absolute correct way to market the Bray Wyatt Fiend personas. Instead of having Michael Cole say over and over and over again, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, could we just drop the Bray Wyatt from the Fiend so that it looks like there really are two separate personas? They didn't say Mankind Mick Foley. Mankind Mick Foley. They didn't say that. So I wish Michael Cole wouldn't do that. But anyway, Bray Wyatt addresses Seth Rollins. Even has some of the puppets there. It was a very cool segment. Seth Rollins does his very best, I guess that's his very best, to look a little creeped out and a little shell-shocked by what happened. But I'm going to be honest with you. He's starting to lose me. He's starting to lose me because he's developing Triple H syndrome. And even Triple H didn't have it that bad when he wrestled. Triple H has it now. Now that Triple H is an executive, Triple H has this I show no ass philosophy. But I remember Triple H being in almost having a panic attack when he found out he's fighting Cactus Jack and not Mick Foley. Remember that, gang? So Seth Rollins tries very hard to look a little disturbed by what he's seeing. But much like Finn Balor before him, they just end up looking like they're constipated or confused. Where is the actual freak out where you really just look at it like, I want no part of this. I don't know what this is, but I don't want any part of it. This isn't wrestling. You got to show some fear. You got to show some trepidation. If you don't, it doesn't sell the character. The very first person who comes out, I'm not afraid of the Fiend. I want to. I can't wait to fight him. They should be fired. Because this is not what you want. It's not what you want. Is that what happened for years and years and years? Everybody was afraid to fight The Undertaker. It came to the point after a couple of years where there were people who put on the false bravado. But this is a new character. And the way that they have developed this character, and they put a lot of effort and money and time into this, you got to sell it. And I think Seth Rollins could have sold it a little bit more. He's doing the best he can, I guess. This is Seth Rollins. I'm showing a little bit of trepidation and fear face, but it's not great. It's not great. Anyway, the segment really wasn't that bad. I think this is the exact way to promote Bray Wyatt and The Fiend as two separate entities, despite the fact that Michael Cole does not want to make them that. And to have The Fiend's opponents addressed always by Bray Wyatt and the Funhouse. Somehow that Funhouse music seems a hell of a lot creepier when it's broadcast live, when you know there's some ominous meaning behind it. Now, the hilarious thing, and I don't know whether it was done on purpose or not, is that when they come back from this Funhouse segment, they go to promote their Raw shows and their SmackDown shows and everything is upside down. Now, I don't know whether they thought this was a lame effort to make it look like Bray Wyatt had disrupted their feed, or they just screwed up. But if it was the former, it didn't work, and if it was the latter, it was pretty damn hilarious. Renee Young finally points out, has this thing been upside down the whole time? Just very weird. So the opening segment was okay, Mike. I just wish that there was a little more actual fear of this unknown coming from Seth Rollins, who I understand is trying to act like the brave hero. I get it. But fans want to put themselves in this position. And if you were really being addressed by someone who's quite obviously insane and quite obviously dangerous and psychopathic, I think it would transcend wrestling and you'd just be like, this is not what I signed up for. This is not competition. This is a nut. And I'm not comfortable with it. And I don't think Seth really conveyed that as good as perhaps he could have.
No, and that's the thing. Now, as far as the technical side of what happened with the upside down thing and the weirdness of it, they came back later. Basically in my mind, this was all about last night. Was mostly, I would say 85% of the show was about the Fiend, because they must have did three or four Fiend segments, a Bray Wyatt Funhouse segment.
Bray Wyatt.
And as night went on, they started doing the whole flipping of the thing and slowing down of the music and all that stuff, and they started to do all that stuff, and it just seemed like that thing, looking back on it, that when they first did the whole flipping of the promos and stuff like that, that thing was something that they actually wanted to do, and that,
it's possible, Mike, but then it could be possible that they realized they screwed up and said, let's work it into the segment at the end. We have 2.5 hours to come up with that idea, and we'll make it look like we did it on purpose so we don't look like a bunch of goofballs. That's possible, too. I do want to remind people, I don't want to get anybody calling up sponsors and yelling and screaming and hollering. I don't want to get anybody all stirred up out there who might be easily triggered. But part of Satanism is everything is backwards. You talk backwards. The upside down cross. So being backwards, if they did it on purpose, could be a message. And it would be a subtle message that most people wouldn't pick up on and say, oh, I don't get it. I don't know. Doesn't matter. And people who know about this stuff would say, they're walking a line there. I don't know. I don't know which it is. But it was a pretty good opening segment, Todd. I just wish we'd have seen a little more selling of his injuries from Seth Rollins and also a little more trepidation on his face when he was addressing the Fiend.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, he was not showing ass last night. He was just stood there like, huh? And it was like, you know, it's like nothing happened to him. Like, come on now. You're supposed to sell your injuries and sell your be frightening thing?
Yeah, I mean, he said, oh, I'm not anywhere near 100%. He tried to sell Braun Strowman by saying that was the toughest fight. That's what Seth Rollins always does, and it comes across condescending. It comes across a guy who knows he's way better than you at chess, and he beats you in 9 moves and then says, yeah, but I'll tell you, that guy really had a strategy, and I had to be on my very best to beat him. My hat is really off to him. He came with an A game. It's just that I'm better. It's very condescending. It really is. It comes across condescending, and I don't think it does Seth Rollins any favors. Now, what's he supposed to do? Come out there and say, I didn't deserve to win? No, of course not. But he has to show it. He doesn't have to say it. He has to show it. Because then we get it. And if I don't hear an interview with Seth Rollins prior to Hell in a Cell where he says, I don't know what the hell I'm even fighting. I see Bray Wyatt up on the screen. I don't see Bray Wyatt in the ring. And I don't know what the hell to expect. And on top of that, I'm locked in Hell in a Cell with it. I don't even consider him a wrestler at this point. I don't know what he is. I mean, because that's the way to sell it. It's not going to happen, though. It's not going to happen. Anyway, the OC comes down. And I got to tell you, I know I may be partial because I'm a big AJ Styles fan. But AJ Styles has been literally the most valuable player in the WWE for the last, I just don't know how long. Whatever you want him to do, heel, face, tweener, put this guy over, put this feud over, he's doing it. And the crowd's responding to him. So anyway, he comes out, the whole OC comes out, and they're going to fight Cedric Alexander and the Viking Raiders, who for some inexplicable reason now are faces and they're buddies of Cedric Alexander. Don't know what to say about it. Put on a pretty good match, as you could expect that they would. And I really thought, well, this is where Cedric Alexander might actually get a win. He probably won't pin AJ, but he'll probably pin one of the OC. Far from it. He gets pinned again by AJ Styles. Then an interesting thing happens. The Viking Raiders kind of clear the ring anyway, and Cedric fights back. And I say, okay, well, here we go. Here's where they sell Cedric as, okay, I got pinned again, but I can still whip AJ Styles' ass. No. Once again, he gets a Styles clash, and he's left laying there. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you about what happened to Cedric Alexander's push, but it has died with AJ Styles. I mean, he's not even looking like he's in the same league as AJ Styles, and they clearly want that message sent. Cedric Alexander and AJ Styles are the difference between a Major League Baseball team and single A. That is exactly the message they're sending. Now, I'm not against them building up AJ Styles. I'm not against them making him look very strong. But you let him pin Drew McIntyre. And I just, for the life of me, have no clue why you gave Cedric Alexander a big enough push to minimize Drew McIntyre and then pulled it away from him. Because he's getting the opposite of a push now. What's your thoughts, Mike?
Right. He is getting the opposite of a push. I call it a negative push, but that's That's what's happening. And you're right about AJ. You know, this guy, for how long, I mean, for how long did he say that SmackDown is the house that AJ Styles built? And, hey, looking back on it, it's the truth. You know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, listen, he's been, everything they've asked him to do, he's done perfectly. That's all you can say about it. Now, before we go any further, let me just say this. Let me get this out of the way. There was a lot more good on Raw last night than bad. There was a lot of surprisingly good segments. Segments I thought I was going to hate that were good. But there was a couple horrific things, too. So while I think in overall this was a very entertaining episode, I'm left scratching my head about a couple of things. First, let's get to the Baron Corbin and Chad Gable match, which was an excellent match. Chad Gable's the real deal, no question about it. Baron Corbin's coming along pretty well. I should say that I got a bone to pick with Baron Corbin, though, because he went on a talk show and literally said, when fans say people aren't being used right, they have no idea what they're talking about because everyone is used right. It's just that you're given an opportunity, and if you don't capitalize on it, then you don't. That's not true. I mean, I don't even understand what you're trying to say. So if tomorrow I tell you, Baron Corbin, you're going to dress up in a chicken suit, come out clucking, lose every single match in under a minute, that's being used right? You think that's you being used to your best ability? If you're saying, well, I have to make the best out of it and try to rise above it, yeah, no, duh. But you're not going anywhere. You can't rise above certain things. When fans say they're not being used correctly, they don't mean, well, they're not given an opportunity to be on television. What fans mean is that they're not being used to the best of their ability. So that would be like saying, we are going to use an actor, a brilliant actor, in a movie, but he's going to be behind a mask and he's not going to say a word. Well, then you've not used him to the best of his ability, and I have no idea why you hired him. Michael Caine is not going to play Jason. And you know why he's not going to play Jason? Because it wouldn't make any sense. He'd want a bazillion dollars. And it doesn't matter who's behind the mask because he doesn't say anything. So when we say they're not being used properly, we're saying they're not being utilized to the best of their abilities so you can maximize their potential. That's what we mean, Baron Corbin. Anyway, Baron Corbin wins. The right guy won. Let's face it. The right guy won. I'm not a huge Baron Corbin fan, but the right guy won. Chad Gable, with a crown and a cape, is instantaneous dumb. It's death of his career. Baron Corbin could pull it off. It works for Baron Corbin. It's not going to work for Chad Gable. So I think the right guy won, Mike.
The right guy did win. And look, we all the time talk about Chad Gable, and, well, recently talk about Chad Gable and his facial expressions. That's what sold the match to me, was Chad Gable. Well, yeah, he's a really, really good wrestler, but his facial expressions. I mean, he's almost to the point of, you know, Dolph Ziggler has some very, very good facial expressions, and he's a very good wrestler. You know, I think his career is about to break. And what you said about not using people correctly, the WWE, the best example of that was what they did with Terry Taylor and the whole chicken thing with him, you know, the Red Rooster.
Yeah, the Red Rooster. Yeah, that's the best you could do with him, right? That's utilizing him to his maximum capacity. That's an opportunity, according to Baron Corbin. I disagree. Anyway, yeah, Chad Gable's facial expressions are great. It really helps. It helps the match. It just does. He has a great way of conveying what he's feeling with the look on his face. And I'll tell you this, that is one of the top things you learn in acting school. Convey your emotions with your face, not your words. Anybody can say, I'm so sad, I'm so happy, I'm so mad. Anybody can do that. Not everybody can let you see it long before you even say those words. So that's a gift. I do think his career is about to break. I really do. And he deserves it because he's really good, and he's a fun wrestler to watch. I should have mentioned, of course, we had the Tag Team Summit, where both sets of champions, tag team champions, come out, and I guess they just talk about how great they are. This is a segment that made no sense, and Braun Strowman charges out and basically just beats up both sets of your tag team champions. But Seth Rollins can beat him up. See, this is what I mean when I say you undermine your championships and your titles. I don't understand this. So let me get this straight. Seth Rollins can beat up Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman can beat up both sets of champions, but he couldn't beat one set at Clash of Champions. And I don't know. I know you want to make Braun Strowman look strong after a loss. Let's not do it at the expense of both sets of your tag team champions. Let's not do that. I don't see that as good. Then we are told we are going to get the gender reveal party from Maria Kanellis, and I literally shrunk down in my chair and said, Jesus, no. This is not what we want. Please. I thought they were going away for good. This is horrible. Much to my surprise, even though some of it was dumb, even the Street Profits, who I'm really, really annoyed with, came off pretty funny this time. First off, all the jabrones are there, waiting for the gender reveal. Maria Kanellis says, oh, it's going to be a boy. But the father is not Mike Kanellis. The father is Ricochet. Now, Ricochet's about as good on the mic as, you know, I don't know who. Never really enjoyed Ricochet on the mic, but he was good this week when he said, wait a minute, that's not true. I would never do it. Well, I mean, I would, but it's a very good, it was a very good line. It was very well delivered. Then Mike Kanellis and him get into it. He says, I'll meet you in the ring. We all know it's garbage that she's trying to motivate Mike Kanellis. We get it. But then the Street Profits and Titus O'Neil start in with, first Titus O'Neil says, man, that guy got to get his stuff straight. First he impregnates somebody's wife, challenge him to a match. His life's about to change. Then they start talking about maybe they can have a baby on a pole match, a Maria Kanellis on a pole match, to which one of the guys says, well, that's how she got in this trouble to begin with. This was actually a pretty funny segment. It was dumb, but I had to laugh despite myself because it was well executed. It was very well executed. Ricochet polishes him off in no time. I don't know where this dumb angle is going. I hope it's not going where we think. Ricochet polishes him off in no time. First, he tries to tell him, I don't really want to fight you. It's stupid. Maria Kanellis comes out and says, well, I thought that if I got you mad enough, maybe it would motivate you to actually win a match for a change. But apparently not. Everybody knows Ricochet's not the father. But I'll tell you who is. And Rusev comes out. Now, up to now, I'm enjoying this segment, despite myself, because at least she admitted she was lying. There was a lot of good lines backstage. I'm okay with it so far. Rusev comes out, and I'm like, I am no longer okay with this in any way, shape, or form. This is not the spot for Rusev. Number one, even if it's a lie again, this is a very dumb way to bring Rusev back. Number two, if it's not a lie, I don't know what the hell you're going to do. Where the hell's Lana? Is that all they can think of to do with Lana and Rusev? Is Lana cheated on Rusev? Oh, no, maybe not. Rusev cheated on Lana. Oh, no, maybe not. Is that it? That's all you can do. Excuse me. I don't want to see Rusev aligned with Maria Kanellis in any way, shape, or form. I hope this is not the case. I hope this is just somebody idiotic way of getting Rusev to come back, and then next week she'll say, it wasn't Rusev either. It's just, I'm trying to get you motivated. Well, then why keep falling for it? And then to make it even worse, Mike Kanellis has to say, look, at this point, even if you are the father, I don't care. Really? Okay, well, then why don't you tell your wife to go to hell? I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. Makes no sense. This is a horrible way to return Rusev. Horrible. It's almost like they're saying, well, Rusev is unhappy and he took some time off and it's about time he comes back. How do we make his life miserable and give him the worst angle we possibly can so nobody will cheer for him and nobody will care? I know. Let's hook him up with the Kanellis disaster. And that'll piss Lana off too. Up to this point, I was really good with this, but I'm telling you, this has got to be. I hope that this is just a one and done. I hope this is just, no, that was all garbage, and it's just her way of introducing Rusev. And we will never see any angles with Rusev and Maria Kanellis again. But I got this weird feeling that's not true. And I got to tell you that if it is true, Rusev's in for another mess. Fans are already waiting to chant Rusev Day, and no, they don't want to take advantage of that again. They knew they screwed that up. They knew they screwed the Rusev Day thing up. They gave him time off so they could hit the reset button. And do you think that they would have enough sense to come back and say, let's just run with that Rusev Day thing again? Nope. Not at all. Instead, they have Rusev come back. He looks good. Dropped a little weight, trimmed up a bit. But this thing with Maria Kanellis, who's about as entertaining as nails on a blackboard, this is just not going to work. And it's such a shame, Mike, because I was willing to accept this angle with Ricochet because Titus O'Neil did such a good job backstage. I don't know where this Titus O'Neil is half the time. Titus O'Neil, used in these ways, sometimes comes up with the best lines and the best whatever in these situations. And even the Street Profits did well. And they were becoming annoying. Everybody did their job well. Even Ricochet, who's not great on the mic, was great on the mic last night. And a segment that I thought I was going to hate, I said, I'm okay with this. I mean, this is actually entertaining. And then they had to go and do this, and that ruined it for me.
Right, they had to go and do this. Now, that whole, up until that point, that segment felt like a Paul Heyman segment. You know, it felt like Paul Heyman had wrote that stuff. Now, granted, that those lines were kind of off the cuff and they were funny, but that whole segment felt like it was a Paul Heyman segment. And frankly, I mean, is Kanellis actually pregnant? Is she actually pregnant?
Yes, she is. Yes.
She is actually pregnant. Now, if she wasn't actually pregnant, then I would say, well, this is another way to actually get Lana back. Because, look, Lana's good on the mic. She's got a personality, and she's got at least some athleticism about her that she can do some things in the ring, you know. And that would be a perfect Kanellis would be a perfect person for her to come in and, you know, get her actual career started on in a good way. But Kanellis is pregnant, so that's not going to happen. And obviously, Lana has to have had to have signed off on this, right?
No, shouldn't have to have signed off on it because Rusev's under contract. They just tell him you're going to do this or you'd stay home. And I guess he said, all right, I'll do it or whatever. I don't know where this is leading, Mike. I don't even know if it's going to be a thing next week. But if it is, it's really the wrong way. It's really the wrong way to introduce Rusev. I would have just reset the button on this Rusev Day thing and let it run. We don't need this again. He's obviously going to be a heel. I don't know. I don't see this working. Todd, up to this point, I thought it was a pretty funny segment, but this is a very bad way to reintroduce Rusev.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like, come on now. He just don't fit in that role right there. Probably, I hope it's like a one-time thing. But the look he had, the mustache and the hair,
yeah,
looks like the guy from the Young and the Restless, the guy who played Victor on the show. He kind of looked like him.
I never watched the show, but listen, I don't know. A horrible way to reintroduce Rusev. A guaranteed fail. We then have the R-Truth segment with Carmella, and they're in Tennessee being toured the Knoxville by the mayor, which is, of course, Glenn Jacobs Kane. This was a pretty funny segment, too. Again, I'm not a big fan of the 24/7 belt. It's really run its course with me a month ago or more. But this was actually a pretty funny segment, helped again by a veteran like Glenn Jacobs, who not only was able to deliver the lines very well, but actually genuinely made me laugh when he won the belt and then ran off in the distance saying, "I still got it." That was actually entertaining. Him and R-Truth had some chemistry together. It worked. You know, it's a comedic distraction from the show, I guess, Mike, but I thought that that Glenn Jacobs did a good job with that.
Again, when you've got two guys who are obvious veterans who know how to do this kind of stuff, who have chemistry together and who have a charisma, both separately and apparently together as well, that's why this thing works, is their charisma and their professionals and everything else. They're good. And this is, if they could do this more often with more people, then I'd be for the 24/7 belt, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice distraction from the show. It just can't be front and center all the time. The thing about Glenn Jacobs that most surprises me is he's really got good comedic timing and chops for a guy who spent most of his career in a mask being a demon. So, yeah, it's interesting. We get Rey Mysterio against Cesaro. This should have been a great match and was a great match. But again, weird stuff. Cesaro comes out with his music, with his theme song, with a microphone saying, "The next time I see your kid, I'm going to beat him up just like I'm going to beat you up." And then Corey Graves follows up by saying, "Well, Cesaro wasn't ready for a match." Well, what the hell is he down there for then? Why'd you cue his music? Why'd he get in the ring? Of course he was ready for a match. What the hell are you people talking about? Really weird. Just weird. Mysterio wins. Good match. You know, I see where this is leading. At least I hope I see where this is leading. I see this leading to Rey Mysterio having a decent run. Mysterio possibly tag teaming with his son in the very near future. And maybe having his son take a couple of losses for the team. Rey trying to pat him on the back, much like his son did with Rey, saying, "Don't worry about it, you know, get him next time." And his son getting frustrated and beating the hell out of Rey Mysterio. I kind of think that's where it has to go. If it's not going there, I don't know where it's going. Trouble is, this kid does not look like a mean or a badass or anything else. He, you know. So we'll see. I'm skeptical. We had another nice Firefly Funhouse where Bray Wyatt's hanging on the wall, all of his friends, who just happens to be the people he attacked. They're doing a great job with the Firefly Funhouse. They got to keep this up. But they got to tell Michael Cole not to keep saying The Fiend to Bray Wyatt. I'm telling you, they got to do it. Overall, though, up till now, I'm saying to myself, well, except for the Rusev thing, which was tragic, yeah, man, this show is pretty good, and we're staring down the barrel of Bayley and Sasha versus Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. Pretty good match, and they really let Nikki Cross shine. When Nikki Cross got the hot tag, and literally was beating the hell out of both Bailey, and then she got Sasha in between the ring apron and beat the hell out of her. And when Sasha was rising to her feet to try to get out, drop kicked her in the head and sent her back down. I'm saying this is reminiscent of old WWE where the hot tag really meant something, and she's really cleaning house. And I'm waiting for the announcers to say she's single-handedly beaten the hell out of the former tag team champions, but they didn't do it. Corey Graves has this weird habit of thinking, I'm a bad guy announcer, so I can't sell any good guys ever, no matter what they do. He really needs to take a page out of the Jerry Lawler book and understand that it's kind of your job to sell the faces in a roundabout way. But anyway, we get that weird thing again where Alexa Bliss is hurt and she's not participating in the match. This kind of happened at Clash of Champions to an extent after a while. And it makes me think that we are getting the flip pretty soon. Either Alexa Bliss is going to turn on Nikki Cross, or Nikki Cross is going to say, I'm tired of doing all the work while you're sitting outside holding your ankle every time. One of the two is going to happen, because I can guarantee you Alexa Bliss wasn't really hurt. What do you think of the match overall, Mike?
I liked it, and I knew something was up when she didn't show up, when Alexa Bliss did not show up in the Harley Quinn thing, you know? She had her hair down and long and all that stuff, and her normal, almost her normal ring gear and stuff like that. Minus, of course, the gloves that she sometimes wears, but I knew something was up, and I enjoyed, this is, like you said, this is something they would do with classic WWE, you know, make one person look really, 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 really strong at the expense of somebody else. But, you know, we know that Sasha and Bayley aren't going to be a long-term tag team. They're friends, they're playing them as friends, but they're not going to be a long-term tag team, whereas this
Look, it's working. And Sasha and Bailey got, of course, the big victory. That's good. Then, of course, they go to beat down Nikki Cross, and out comes Becky Lynch. And then, to everybody's surprise, out comes Charlotte. And while the chair duel was a little dumb, and it was obvious they were swinging where they couldn't even hit each other if they tried, and they were being a little too extra careful with them, it still worked. It still worked to an extent. And Charlotte Flair, to my surprise, got a pretty big pop, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Charlotte Flair, I'm surprised the fans were cheering for Charlotte Flair when she came out, and like, she's supposed to be a heel.
Yeah, she got a pretty big pop for that. I know she's helping Becky Lynch, but she got a pretty good pop. R-Truth then apparently rides on top of the limo to Monday Night Raw, where he confronts Glenn Jacobs and rolls him up for the three count. Glenn Jacobs grabs him in his more of his Kane persona to choke him, and R-Truth reasons with him and says, wait, you know, your job is like my job, 24-7, you're doing something, you've got plans, you've got business to take care of 24/7. How can you have this belt and that? And Glenn Jacobs said, I guess you're right about that. Maybe I better just forget it. And they decide to go in and watch Monday Night Raw together, which is fine. It's a fine way to end that segment. Lacey Evans versus Dana Brooke. I'm really, really sad that the fans don't pop for the undercard women's competitors, because we know Lacey Evans is winning, and we know that Dana Brooke is, you know, a female enhancement talent, but at least get behind her so that the powers that be can say, well, you know, the fans can dig her. She's trying hard, and she's not the greatest person in the ring. She's also not the worst. And truthfully, you know, the fans just didn't care about this match at all. Lacey Evans wins with Natalya Sharpshooter, which means, Jesus, the feud's continuing. I'd rather see Dana Brooke and Lacey Evans in a feud at this point than Natty. I really would. So I thought this was just a throwaway match. And unfortunately, I think maybe they just said, let's bring Dana Brooke out and see if she can get some fan support, and didn't happen, Mike. So it's a shame.
Even though it didn't happen, even though, she showed that she has improved some in the ring, and she did some pretty cool things, including, I believe, a hamstring elbow or hamstring back fist or something that she did. That's a pretty athletic look. She's a power wrestler she is a power wrestler, though, and she had some pretty good power moves in that match. So, yeah, she did her job, and she did it well. And at some point, they're going to have to figure a way to get Dana Brooke to the point of where people buy she at least has a shot at beating somebody.
Yeah, I would love to see them promote her a little bit, do something with her. We need some more actual personalities in the women's division. Before we get to the main event, let me say that I was a little confused by some of the news because people were talking to me about Joey Janela and who I thought was Enzo again, and I said, no, that's old news. Joey Janela and Enzo at the Blink 182 concert, we all know. But apparently that's not the case. Apparently it was Big Cass. And from what Janela says, Cass and him were on the same show, and Cass was acting very weird backstage, insulting people, accusing people of stealing his sweater, really getting after Janela. Apparently one of the road managers got in his face. Cass told him, what are you going to do about it? The guy knocked him out, apparently. The police came. Janela said he didn't want to press any charges because he thinks Cass needs help. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what the hell's going on. I can tell you this. I can speculate. I'm not Dr. Phil, but I can speculate. And it seems like Cass's career went to hell in a handcart as soon as him and Carmella broke up. And I'm not sure Cass is maybe he took that harder than we think. Because this has been a train wreck for him. Just a train wreck. And every time he's getting that close to getting into a major organization, we hear these problems. And I'm telling you right now, they're not going to put up with it. This is instant, repellent for AEW, Ring of Honor, WWE. They see that and they say, I don't need that. I don't want that in the dressing room. I don't want that in my locker room. I don't want that backstage. So I don't know, folks. Some people were saying it was a work. I don't know whether it was or it wasn't. I think the original Enzo and Janela was probably a work. It was probably a shoot work in the sense that neither one of them knew they were going to do it ahead of time. But once they got into it, they realized we're getting some publicity off this, and they just let it go. This one, I don't know. It just sounds weird, and I hope everything goes well for Cass, but it's not looking good. Anyway, let's get to the main event, which is Seth Rollins versus Robert Roode. And, of course, Dolph Ziggler shows up at ringside. This is not really a main event. We know why it's the main event. We already know why it's the main event. Because The Fiend is going to show up. Otherwise, this really isn't the main event. Match didn't go on very long before Dolph Ziggler interferes, causes a disqualification. For some unknown reason, the OC comes down, and they all decide they're all going to beat the hell out of Seth Rollins. And out comes Kane. And I say to myself, well, this makes some sense. They're in Tennessee here, and he's going to get his moment to shine. And he literally destroys the entire OC and the tag team champions. This is twice that the tag team champions has been destroyed by one man in the same show. I want you to understand that. These are your brand new tag team champions, and they've been destroyed by Braun Strowman, and they've been destroyed by Kane. The OC, who's been unstoppable for about a month, they're single-handedly destroyed by Kane. And then The Fiend shows up and destroys Kane, which is fine. He's been doing that to the legends and everything, so that's fine. But then we're left with something really weird, and I think it was a miscue on the WWE's part. It's a misfire. The Fiend crawls over to Seth Rollins, And instead of staying with the live shot, we are just subjected to the Firefly Funhouse theme song and visual being distorted, twisted, turned upside down, slowed down, sped up, repeated for way too long, for like 2.5 minutes. When in reality, people want to see what the hell's going on in the ring. This was probably the first mistake they've made with The Fiend. And I caution them very highly. You've made this mistake with Bray Wyatt before, where you tried to make it appear as though he could make lights appear in the ring that had bugs and special effects, and people laughed at it. It didn't have the reaction you wanted. Bray Wyatt is not supposed to be supernatural. He's supposed to be psychologically twisted. He's supposed to be psychotic. That's not supernatural. Please look up the definition of psychotic. There's nothing in it that says they're a magician, that they're a witch, that they're a wizard, that they're supernatural beings. He's just a psychotic man who manifests his hate into this form of the Fiend because he has to stay calm as the other character. And if you ruin it, and you start to make him again, this guy who can make things move and lights, you know, appear and graphics change, you're making a huge, terrible mistake. Fans aren't going to buy it. They're just not going to buy it. And this is how the show closes. So the only two mistakes I thought they made in what I thought was a very entertaining Raw, actually, was I am mortified if this is the way that they're bringing Rusev back. This is absolutely not the way fans want to see Rusev brought back. And I don't understand what's wrong with giving the fans what they want. That's what always frustrates me about the WWE. If you had a production meeting about Rusev, the very first thing you ask yourself is, what would the fans most like to see? What do you think would make the fans sit up and take notice? And I would quickly raise my hand and say, well, you blew Rusev Day. So how about if they come back happy-go-lucky couple with the whole Rusev Day thing again and try to, you know, push their way to the top? They'd have all the fan support in the world. We'd sell a whole bunch more merchandise. You'd get those chants started again. We could just relive that entire thing. And if it's not working, we can cut it off at the knees and do something else. But let's do that because I really think that's the way the fans would want it. And aren't, at the end of the day, isn't that who we're here to please? Nah, let's make them come back as Marie Canales' potential baby. Because the fans won't expect that. We also don't like it, though. Just because they don't expect it, we like it. If you own an ice cream parlor and you say, you know what, everybody serves vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry, so I'm not gonna. I have Indian Mocha Fireball Deluxe. And everybody says, well, that's great, but I don't think that sounds very good. How long are you going to be in business? Well, but I'm creative. I don't have vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. That everybody has that. You'll love Indian Toffee Mocha Delight Fireball. Yeah, no, that sounds disgusting. And then you just move on to the ice cream stand that has vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. Don't reinvent the wheel, WWE. You know what Rusev's most popular thing was? Just run it. And second, please don't blow the Fiend. Please do not blow this gimmick. You're already really coming close to blowing it by even giving him a title shot, which should not happen. Absolutely should not happen. The only reason I am not going crazy about the fact that you're giving The Fiend a title shot is because, A, I don't think he's going to win. And, B, I don't think he's going to lose. I am still convinced that the WWE has put all their cards in a row for a major Wyatt family reunion, and I think they're going to hit that cell. And I think it's going to leave Seth Rollins in bad shape, but I don't think he's going to lose the title. Because putting a title belt on the waist of the Fiend so he comes out holding the title like, look what I got a prize, that's going to kill that character. And if they don't know that, they're idiots. So if the only reason you're doing this is to have that shock Wyatt family reunion, I'm okay with it. But then back off, no more title shots, no more nothing. Seth Rollins got mauled like an animal, but it's called a no contest because everybody jumped in the friggin' ring. That'll be fine. If you do anything other than that, I'm not okay with it. But I'll reserve my judgment on that. But the Rusev thing is an abomination. Aside from that, Cesaro and Rey Mysterio was great. Once again, I don't know why you're punishing Cedric Alexander, but you're making the OC look good, so that's fine. I thought Becky Lynch and Sasha had a pretty good exchange, except Sasha has one job, and that's to say, either I challenge you to a match at Hell in a Cell if you're man enough to accept, or I challenge you to a match at Hell in a Cell, but I don't think you are man enough to accept. And instead she says, I challenge you to a match at Hell in a Cell if you aren't man enough. Okay. Well, you blew your line. You had one line. One. To her credit, Becky Lynch did a whole lot better. And Becky Lynch said, I have no interest in fighting you at Hell in a Cell, fighting you at Hell in a Cell. I have an interest in fighting you in Hell in a Cell. And that was a much better line. But overall, this was a pretty entertaining show. There was a few spots that really caught me by surprise. Glenn Jacobs running away with the belt singing I Still Got It was hilarious. The Street Profits coming up with Maria on a pole was exactly how she got in this trouble to begin with, was hilarious. Titus O'Neil's outrage and total belief that Ricochet was the father of Maria Kanellis' child was hilarious. Most of the Bray Wyatt stuff was very, very, very good, except for the ending. And I think overall, it was a pretty damn good episode. If it wasn't for the Rusev thing and the really wacky, overblown ending, this would probably be an A show. Because of the Rusev thing and the wacky, overblown ending, I'm going to give it a B+, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I'm going to give it a B+ as well, and you're right with Rusev. First off, that mustache, I mean, can we say porn star mustache? You know?
Yeah.
You know, that's what that is. And I don't know. And frankly, when as far as Lana is, when she did that whole thing on YouTube, you go back and look at that tape thing that she did, it looked like she had some sort of a cast on her ankle or on her foot or something. Maybe she broke her foot or something at somewhere along the line. And she was laying on the couch while she was doing that thing. So, yeah, she now, is she healthy right now? Probably so. I mean, how long does it take for a broken foot or a broken ankle to, if she did have that, to heal? So she's probably healthy enough to come back and do some stuff, you know. And we know she's good
Mike,
on the mic.
Did they say anything last night? I didn't catch it. Did they say anything last night, the announcers, about Lana? Did they say, well, what's Lana going to say about this or anything? I mean, I didn't hear it. Did they?
I thought I heard, what's her name say it, Renee.
Oh, okay.
I thought I heard Renee say it, you know.
If they mentioned her, then that's good. Because if they didn't mention her, I was going to say, well, she may be done. Because if they didn't even mention her, then that's not a good sign. So if they did, then something's going to come of this. But what's going to come of it? Like you said, so she's going to go and get Maria Kanellis' face. She can't do anything. She's pregnant. So I don't even know where this is going. And it's not going anywhere where the fans are going to enjoy it. I'm telling you. Don't fix it if it's not broke. And the Rusev Day thing was not broke. Fans were just loving chanting it. He came out and the fans popped and started chanting Rusev Day, Rusev Day. And then he tried to get him to not chant it, I guess, because then fans realized, wait a minute, he's going to be a heel and he's not going to do the Rusev Day thing. We get it. The WWE doesn't want to give this to us. Why? Why, when they clearly want it? I don't understand that. Why do you care? All you care about is making money. If you could run that Rusev thing another year and make money, why do you care? Just let him come out and do the Rusev Day thing until it's dead, until nobody chants it, until there's no T-shirt selling, until there's no merchandise moving, and then you change him. Until then, God damn it, leave him alone. We'll see. We will see. And we got the news on the draft. We should talk about that briefly. This draft apparently is going to be like the NFL draft. They're going to actually give stats, you know, 6-40. That's not a dog. Irregardless, supposedly this is for kids. In other words, there is a hard rule. When these people are chosen, that's the only brand they can be on unless they are trading or there's another draft. So they are clearly going to separate these for Fox and USA. Todd, what's your rating on this week's show?
B+.
So we all in agreement that it was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it. I really flipped my lid on the Rusev thing, but I enjoyed it. Otherwise, other than that, I enjoyed it. Last thing we should leave with is that Kevin Owen very possibly will be making his NXT debut Wednesday. The reason I say this is because Kevin Owens made a tweet, which was a series of numbers, three separate numbers. If you follow the letters of the alphabet, or like 14 and whatever else it is, it spells NXT. If that's the case, it's going to be a good thing. It's really missed. Despite the fact that Aaron Corbin missed, he was really missed. He was really vulnerable. He was you're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.